Well, we're about to say Yisker, and Yisker sermons tend to be challenging for rabbis. And the reason is we give so many of them. We say Yisker 4 times a year. And if you do the math, that's a lot of Yisker sermons. And it gets hard to figure out, what do I say that I haven't already said before? What can we say that you haven't already heard before? Unfortunately, we do not have that problem this year. This year, we have the problem of an entirely and tragically fresh angle on Yisker. Because the last time that we said Yisker was October 7th. The last time we said Yisker was October 7th in the Israeli calendar. As you know, it was Simchat Torah, because in Israel they do Simchat Torah and Shmini Atzeret on the same day. But in the American calendar, October 7th was Shmini Atzeret. So we woke up to come here and say Yisker with the news of what happened. And then, of course, if you remember, that Saturday night and Sunday was the unreal experience of doing Simchat Torah in the exact opposite of feeling any simcha. So here's my question, and I don't need to tell you, you already know, that the 6+ months since October 7th have been and remain, the most harrowing for the Jewish people literally since the Holocaust. And here's my question. What does our people's wrenching, horrific, painful, atrocious season since October 7th, what is the impact of that on our private Yisker? What is our people's national pain? Our people's national anguish, what's the impact of that on our private Yisker meditations right now? So, those of you who have been to our evening service in the Gan Chapel know that we have this very beautiful tradition. After Mincha and before Maariv, we invite people who are marking a Yahrzeit to come up if they wish and share a few words about their loved one. And every night, 1, 2, sometimes 3 people will come up and they'll speak from their heart. And it's really beautiful. And we've been doing that for years. But since October 7th, a new trope has been introduced into that space. It's a recurring motif. And it comes in 1 of 2 different flavors. And I'll try to channel this now. This is what our members say at about 7:36 about their beloved departed. Here's the first one. My father died before October 7th, and I am so glad he did. My father just loved Israel. My father just believed in Israel. Israel was so important to my dad. And if my father knew what happened on October 7th, if he knew about the slaughter, if he knew about the hostages, if he knew about the war, if he knew about the dead soldiers from the IDF, if my dad knew about the hatred for Israel that this war, this just war, has spawned in the world, it would have killed my father. As it is, I'm sure he's rolling around in his grave. But I am so glad my dad died before October 7th. We hear that all the time. Here's the second variety. Can you get, Morris, can you close the doors, please? Thank you. Here's the second variety. My mother loved America. She believed in America. She believed that America was the best place for the Jewish people to live, other than Israel. And my mother always said that anti-Semitism couldn't happen here. She always said, my mom always said, Europe is a graveyard for Jews. My mom always said that in France, there's real French people and Jews who lived in France. And in Germany, there's real Germans and Jews who lived in Germany. But in America, she said, we're all hyphenated. The hyphen is going to save us. Everybody's from somewhere else. Therefore, it can't happen here. And my mom died before October 7th, so she never saw what happened here. If she did, it would have killed her. As it is, she's rolling around in her grave. I'm so glad my mom died before she saw the anti-Semitism of the last several months. Now, those kinds of comments resonate deeply for me personally. Our father died before October 7th. So our father got to live for 74 years in America that was before October 7th. And he got to live his last 20 years in Israel, in Jerusalem, that was before October 7th. So the grief that is always with us, the grief that keeps us up at night, he never knew. Thank God for that. So, here's my question on this Yizkor. What do we do with this trope? What do we do with it now? I think there are two responses. The first is there's this category, it's mitzvah called Hakarat HaTov, which is being grateful for, intentional about the good. Here's what I want to say to us now. If the people that we remember now emerged into their adulthood after 1948 and before October 7th, then truly they were the most blessed generation of Jews in the history of the Jewish people. Let me say that again. If your mother, your father, your grandparents, or your brother, your sister, your spouse, or God forbid, your children, if they lived and they enjoyed their life after 1948 and before October 7th, then in the 4,000-year history of our people, they were the luckiest generation. We hear about the greatest generation. They're the luckiest generation of Jews. After the Shoah, after the angst of the establishment of the State of Israel after Mohammed HaShikrur and before October 7th, that was when American Jewry and Israel were both peaceful, stable, and strong. Hashem, thank you for letting our loved ones live in that mamish golden age. Wasn't perfect, obviously. We know perfect's not an option, but it was a lot better than what we got now. Second, and I think much more important than the Hakarat HaTov, and this is the real work of Yizkor this morning. So much of our world since October 7th is a deep pain and deep grief that's brought about by stuff we cannot control. We can't actually control any of it. We cannot control what Hamas did. We cannot control what the IDF has done in response to what Hamas did. We cannot control what college kids and what college faculty do on college campuses do. We can't control that, but the stuff that we can't control gives us indigestion and angina. I have found the following change in my practice. It's a daily practice, and I found out when I shared this with other people have done the same thing too. I used to, this is an October 6th practice, I used to come home and eat lunch and open my iPad and read the news while I was eating lunch. No more. When I turn on my iPad, it's just indigestion. It's just angina. It's just pain. It's just, and it's inconsistent with eating. So I now don't turn on a screen when I eat. And so many people have told me in different ways that they reduce how much and how they take in the news because of events we can't control that cause us angina. So here's our response to that, and I think this is a good response to that. Let's flip the script. Let's flip the script. Where is it? We all have lost so much because we don't have control. So where is it that we do have control? Ah, and here's the really good news. We actually have control over the single thing that is most important in our lives. We have control over the single thing that is the most important thing in our lives. The most important thing in our lives is the quality of our relationships. A successful life is a successful life because it has successful relationships in it. Our life is measured by the quality of our relationships. Or as my late father-in-law used to say, if you've made it with your family and you've made it with your friends, then you've made it in life. And it doesn't matter what else you do or do not accomplish. And if you haven't made it with your family and friends, then you haven't made it in life. It doesn't matter what else you have or have not accomplished. What matters most is our relationships, and that's the one thing that we can control. So here's my spiritual homework question for you, as we're about to say Yizkor. What relationships in your life need mending? What relationships in your life need mending? And let me be granular here. I think there's basically two kinds of areas that need mending. One is there was an actual break between you and the other person. I said something, I did something, the other person said something, did something, and it caused a break. It caused a rupture. I didn't do something. I didn't show up. I didn't show up. They didn't do something. They didn't show up. And now there's a break. And you know how this works. You know exactly how this works. Everyone does. Days turn into months, turn into years, turn into forever. And so what about flipping the script? And using this as an opportunity to say, there's so much brokenness that we cannot control. Why don't we fix what we can control? Why don't we fix us? And why don't we start now? That's the first genre, the break. Here's the second genre. Also tough, very tough. Not a break, but drift. Just drift into mutual irrelevance. That is, there wasn't a falling apart. You just fell away from each other. Just stopped talking to each other. No particular furibble, no particular issue. Just disconnection and drift. Now, all of you know the paradox. You all know this paradox. That the more you talk to somebody, the more you have to say to them. And the less you talk to somebody, the less you have to say to them. So most of us have our go-to person. That when we're driving home, when we're in traffic, when we're doing the dishes, when we're doing laundry, our daily go-to person. And you have some version of the following conversation. Hey, what'd you have for lunch or dinner? You had a deli sandwich. Interesting. What kind of bread? Rye? Light rye or dark rye? Okay. And did you have mustard? Mustard. Was it Dijon or honey mustard? And you can talk about that person that you've already talked to three times. You can talk to forever. Because you could talk about Dijon or honey mustard. And that matters, man. And that's the most important thing in life. That's the most important thing in life. And the person that you haven't talked to in decades, you have vast swaths of your lives you could catch up on. You don't even know where to begin. So, what relationships of yours need mending? The break that could be healed. And the drift that could be arrested and your connection restored. Because in this post-October 7th world, where we have lost so much and have so little control, that's the one thing we can control. Story is told of a man who comes to Rabbi and says, "My sister just died, and I feel lost, and I just got so much emotion. First of all, that was my last sibling. All my sibs are gone now. My parents are gone. I'm the last one in my family of origin. My sister and I were very, very different. Very different. But we loved each other, and we were connected. And then when her husband died 10 years ago, and she was all alone, I tried to show up for her, and I tried to be there. But I could have done more. And I should have done more. And I didn't. And I'm just left with regret." And that's the pathos of death. When they're gone, we can't fix it. And that's the promise of life. When they're here, we still can. Let's live regret-free. Just live regret-free. We rise.